Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, depository service. Been in business a couple decades. Proud of our name. Just had an interesting conversation. It's not uncommon, I guess, when you're in business for people to try to copy your name or mimic it and act like it's just a coincidence. And I won't go into much more detail there, but we all know what the Bible says about our name and the power of a name. And I think that that is, I think that's a very important thing to always keep in mind, is that your name is the legacy you leave behind. You know, one, it's interesting that we really, I guess sometimes I kind of get a little philosophical about this whole thing. But we leave this earth really with nothing. I mean, it's like some of us, you know, some of the very maybe lucky few, you know, leave with, you know, Thomas Jefferson with statues and things like that. But so as far as tangible evidence of our existence, all that we really leave, some of us will leave some tangible evidence if we're, you know, make some great accomplishment on earth that, you know, or we're in some high level of politics or whatever. But the truth of it is, most of us think that we don't leave behind, much, but what we do is we leave our legacy. And it's important to realize that your legacy is what determines your long-term judgment. And, you know, the Bible talks about how when judgment comes, it's basically everything, everything comes after everything has been shut down, after the completion of all things. And so what I'm trying to get at there is the fact that the behavior that you do leads every deed, you know, it basically like Ecclesiastes says, he's going to bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it's good or evil. Now, we think of ourselves, we because for some reason we're a very self-centered being, there's no question about that. But we don't realize that the legacy that you leave behind, if you, you know, go from one extreme to another, if you, you know, you just do good to everyone, I mean, as much as you can, you do what's right, you don't put money first, you're not cowardly, in other words, you're brave. You know, the Bible talks about the God wants us to be brave. And I think that many of us become cowardly in our desire to avoid conflict. And what happens is, as we allow that to grow and develop, it will get worse. It never gets better. You don't build bravery. What I don't understand is people that don't want to be brave. And, you know, and there's people that will literally stand, folks. Look, we had this school shooting a few weeks ago. I mean, maybe I'm kind of a unique individual in the way I see things, but can you imagine for a moment, a police officer, okay, who has dedicated his life, as far as I understand, to preserving, to protecting, to serving, to upholding the laws of this land. And for a police officer to be outside of an elementary school while he knows that somebody's inside of that school shooting children. I mean, he knows it's going on, and he chooses not to go in. Folks, I cannot comprehend that. That bothers me. It's been bothering me. I don't understand it. We are so commanded by our Lord to preserve and protect and love the children. You know, children are innocent. Children are only as safe as you or I make them. You know, who is there to protect them? And I'm telling you, the school systems are doing things to children that are so cruel. Children are being expelled. I just saw a child situation that was expelled because he drew a picture of a guy holding a military assault rifle, as we call them now. He just showed a guy holding a machine gun or whatever the heck you want to call it, an AR-15. A young boy drew a picture of a guy holding a gun, and he got expelled from school. Folks, what is wrong with us? Do we want some of our children to become military members? Or do we want to discourage that? Is it a big secret that that's a career option that you could choose, that you want to protect freedom? Folks, I am telling you, first of all, the value, like I said, of a name is so darn important. Proverbs 22:1 says, a good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better than silver or gold. Now, we've both been on both sides of that. We know what it's like, each one of us, to be esteemed. We know what it's like to have people like us, care about us, think highly of us. And we also, I'm assuming anyone on this earth has had the same experience of rightfully or wrongfully having people think poorly of us. I mean, in fact, you can get to the point where you get a self-fulfilling prophecy. As a child, I was super hyperactive. I mean, I was super hyperactive. And I candidly got in a lot of trouble. And a lot of it, honestly, I had no control. I was just like super duper hyperactive. Why? I don't know. But I got to live portions of my life with a preconceived stamp put on me of, oh, that kid's a bad kid, or, you know, or that kid's trouble, or, and then to be treated that way is it's really rough when you know yourself and you know your true intentions. One of the most frustrating experiences, I think, that for me in existence is to be falsely accused. If you think about it, if somebody bears false witness, that to me is like, wow. You know, thou shalt not bear false witness. People, there's all kinds of translations and, ways that people read and rule out this and that in the Bible, and what's this mean and what's that mean, and there's always a debate over this or that. In other words, when it comes to thou shalt not bear false witness, there's, I've seen people, well, that means don't lie. Other people will say, well, that means don't, literally bear false witness. In other words, don't say something happened that didn't. Don't accuse somebody falsely that they didn't do it. Don't bear false witness. Now, when you think of our tendency towards gossip, and you think of, for some reason, the Bible says that gossip to us is like dainty morsels. It's like some kind of a tasty, like pastry why would we desire that so much? I don't know. I mean, I really wish I could answer that question. Honestly, I really would. I mean, but I guess it's our sinful nature. I mean, I don't know what it is. Why do we want so badly to hurt others? And I truly believe in our heart of hearts, if we love one another, as Jesus said, you know, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Those are the two great commandments. I really believe that as you mature as a believer, I think that that is the fruit of the Spirit. I think the fruit of the Spirit is that you grow, that you become comfortable in who you are as a believer, that you become strong, that you become empowered, and that you begin to manifest the love of Christ. And when I, you know, I used to always see this, be more Christ-like, be more Christ-like, when I was a young Christian. And honestly, in my mind, I saw a guy who gave up everything, who walked around in sandals and a tunic, basically. And, you know, and he was Jewish, and I didn't fully understand that. But I, you know, I was like, I can't be like that. That's not who I am. Well, and it's very clear God makes each of us who we are. So when I think when we really begin to learn to see what Jesus did and his love for us and his sacrifice that he made on the cross and his heart for the people, and when he wept, you know, over the city, he wasn't weeping for the Pharisees. He wasn't weeping for the highly self-promoted, self-righteous, which, by the way, those are the ones that try to elevate and pump their own name up. He was weeping for all these humans that are living on this earth in pain and suffering and sorrow and misery. And I'll tell you, folks, that pain and suffering and sorrow, I think, on this earth exists now more than ever. I mean, maybe not in centralized areas. It's been much worse, obviously. But overall, I think people's lack of peace within themselves and lack of confidence and lack of concern, you know, for one another, as Timothy warns us, I think is truly at an all-time high. And it's, I think a reasonable theory when you look at Timothy, you know, when he talks about in the end times what we're going to see, when he tells us, but realize this, that in the last days, really difficult times are going to come. I've discussed this verse, this scripture before, but I mean, my goodness. Is this human nature? Or is this unique to the end times? Is this what it was like before the flood? Or is this unique and different? Or we just always end up in the same position and God had to wipe us out once and save us again? You know, and he says, but realize this, that in the last days, difficult times will come. He tells us that men will be lovers of self, okay, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revelers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Holding to a form of godliness, although they have denied its power. Avoid such men as these. I mean, he's basically describing where we're at. And as a nation, we have a movement that is trying with all of its might to tear apart the very fabric of who we are. What in the world? Why was Obama so effective in starting a coup, literally, of attack against our Constitution? I mean, there is no question, folks, and I don't think you disagree with me a bit. We are in an attack. And, you know, I was thinking today about the show. I thought, man, you know, there's so many things I can cover and it's all news and it's, you know, and then I'm like, but gosh, do people think I'm, you know, I don't want to be the kind of person that just picks a topic and harps and harps and harps on it. But on the other hand, we are in spiritual warfare. I mean, we are in spiritual warfare. There is no doubt about it. We literally have things like this. How about, did you know that Planned Parenthood yesterday came out with a statement that said that they want these Disney princesses, they want one that's had an abortion. They wanted one, you know, they want one that's an illegal immigrant. I mean, are you kidding me? Planned Parenthood puts this stuff out. They literally asked. They literally put out a tweet. And I'm going to see if I can find it here because you won't even believe this. Here's the other thing, too, why I'm a little frustrated with Trump. Trump's budget that he signed for $1.3 trillion without reading it included another $500 million for Planned Parenthood. Okay? Planned Parenthood does nothing but abortions. You can tell me whatever you want about them. They're the source of them. They counsel girls to get them. We've got all kinds of video evidence. We've had all kinds of sleuthing, news reporters, journalism, you know, hidden recorders, literally to the point where you get left-wing judges that, you know, they. I love it when someone gets a video of someone admitting to severe crime that is heinous and disgusting, like selling the body parts of an aborted fetus for a profit. And then you get a judge who's more concerned with whether or not the video was obtained legally or not. We've run through all this kind of stuff, folks. I mean, this is the world that we're living in right now. Planned Parenthood put out a tweet that, like I said, I want to find it, but of course it's too small here. It said, "We need a Disney princess who's had an abortion." That's from Planned Parenthood. It says, "We need a Disney princess who's pro-choice. We need a Disney princess who's an undocumented immigrant. We need a Disney princess who's actually a union worker. We need a Disney princess who's trans," meaning transgender. I mean, folks, think about this. You take your children to Disneyland, and I'll admit, everybody takes their kids to Disneyland. Disneyland's a dump. I mean, it is a cesspool. They have sold out every form of morality imaginable. They've sold out on every possible front. I'm going to repeat this. This is a tweet from Planned Parenthood. Now, you think about what I was just reading a minute ago, where it says, you know, men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revelers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, there's another one, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, holding to a form of godliness, although they've denied its power. Avoid such as these. Folks, this is what we're talking about here right now. We are literally talking about a company or supposed nonprofit that gets all their funding from our government, $500 million. What could you do with $500 million? What could a good, well-managed Christian operation organization do with $500 million? I think it'd be pretty impressive. I think that we could transform the world. I do find it ironic often that the money, you know, God works in mysterious ways, and he'll let, you know, sinners accumulate the wealth, but his word says that he will store it up for those who honor him. He says it many different ways in many different places. I think I just read it last night in Proverbs 28 or something like that in a different form where, and I'll see if I can find it real quick. This is talking a little bit different, but it says, he who increases his wealth by interest and usury gathers it for him who is gracious to the poor, and which isn't exactly along the lines of what I was talking about. But there's many scriptures that said God will transfer wealth to those who handle it properly, who glorify him with it. He's ultimately in control. And folks, we need to pray. I know a lot of us, we use that cliche all the time. You got to pray for this, got to pray for that. I've got a friend who I spoke, you know, I've recently caught up with, who's been through a lot of tough stuff. And some tough stuff, and including cancer and whatnot. And when he was going through all that, he kept praying for God's will, God's will, God's will. We sat down with him and prayed for him to be healed. Well, basically, at that point forward, things turned around, and he was healed miraculously. It says in the Bible, delight yourself also in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. God rejoices in our prosperity. I think on the last show, I spoke about that. That show didn't make its way to the website because there was an Apple update that I vented about, if you recall. But basically, God rejoices in the prosperity of his people. He likes our prosperity. He wants, and this is kind of hard for me because I grew up in a way where I think money was probably used in an unhealthy manner, in a controlling manner. And, you know, and it wasn't something that, you know, was freely given. And I think God wants us to obey him. He wants us to live for him. He wants us to seek him. But I think he also wants us to do well. I mean, in 3 John, he says, beloved, I pray that all may go well with you and that you may be in good health. So he's praying there for good health. Psalms 128. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you. And God is able to make grace abound to you, so that having all sufficiency in all things at all times, you may abound in every good thing. And I think over and over there is more and more. I think it's okay to think of a God that loves us and cares about us. And I think that we've lost that in this world. We've become hardened. We've got school shootings that we don't even have cops sticking up for, and we attack the gun instead of the whatever's behind the shooters. These shooters are having problems with medications and different kinds of upbringings, and, you know, whatever's going on, we don't know for sure. But we do know, but you can't blame the utensil. You can't blame the vehicle or the weapon. They're confiscating knives in Europe. They're having people turn in knives for $10 a piece or whatever. And I mean, it's just one thing after the next. When a country disarms its people, I warn you, that is when that country is finished. Be warned. Realize that that is an absolute necessity. And if you don't think, right now, it's like we had a retired Supreme Court justice come out yesterday at some kind of fundraiser. I think it was Justice Stevens, I can't recall. And he literally came out and said, we need to repeal the Second Amendment. And one thing you got to watch for is this consensus thinking. All these polls they throw at you. Two reasons. Number one, I have a very strong academic and occupational professional background in statistics, in calculating and gathering statistics. You can use questions before and after. You can use a whole series of information to lead up to a question. You can get pretty much the answers you want out of people by how you ask a question and when. And so these polls are designed to change your thinking to become more mainstream. Supposedly, according to polls that came out yesterday or recently, supposedly 20% of Americans want to completely abolish the Second Amendment. Supposedly 57% of Americans want to change the Second Amendment. They want to alter it. They want to make it harder to get guns, or they want to basically limit your rights to own guns. They want to use things like I spoke on the last show, like words like high capacity clips, or you know, things like that. And I'll tell you honestly, we talked about gunsplaining at the end of the last show, and It is, I don't even know if you realize how slippery of a slope that becomes. There's so many different things here that I've got written down to talk about. Our deficit, we've got all this kind of stuff going on. We've got, you know, on and on. But I think what I'll do is I'll touch a little bit on a little more news highlights, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about finances. In fact, you know what we should do? Let's talk about financial stuff, because that's what the show's called, True Wealth, right? And it's become an opinion op-ed show. Let's talk about metals. We've got gold up, you know, 4%, and, well, no, actually, gold's up, oh boy, here goes my math, 8%. And in gold and silver are both up about 8% for the year, 4 to 8%, depending on, you know, this, that, and the other. That's not bad, okay? That's really good. That's a solid return. When it comes to investing, we've got so many good coins right now. I have kind of gone into the marketplace. This market reminds me of the coin market of the 90s. After the 80s, we had a really strong boom in coins. And we had hyperinflation and everything, like hard asset. Coins went crazy. People couldn't buy real estate. Folks, you got to realize what's going on right now with real estate. There is something going on with real estate that is unheard of. They don't know why, but home sales have absolutely crashed. They have frozen. completely frozen. They don't know why. Okay? They're not telling you this because it's not what they want you to know. And it's interesting that they'll trash Trump, but certain aspects of the economy they won't trash because they don't want to hurt our news anchors, 401ks. I mean, that's the truth. You have to remember that these news anchors are obviously visibly tied into the stock market. You can tell. You can see the emotion on their face when it goes up, when it goes down, etc. And they don't want their real estate going down. The only people that like to see a drop or a lull in real estate, I suppose, are those that maybe are in the market. But here's what makes no sense at all. There is no inventory. The lowest inventory in our area, in many areas around the U.S., the lowest inventories since like 2005 and even before. And in 2005, it was because demand was out of control. So what's going on is real estate inventories, in other words, houses for sale, they're like not there. They're down in the dumps. But at the same time, the buyers are quiet too. Interest rates are creeping up. Folks, when you invest or 401ks, IRAs, whatever, you have to put your money. You've got to, you know, they always say that the big boys on Wall Street that make the money, they buy the rumor, sell the fact. Here's the fact. The fact is interest rates are going up. Hyperinflation is on its way. I just spoke to an older 77 or some year old physician who's like one of the last holdouts in existence. And I was talking to him. In other words, he still owns his own practice, and how he does it, I don't know. We had a big talk. And we talked about healthcare, and he said, he goes, what a mess. All these big companies try to come in and buy them out all the time because the paperwork and the bureaucracy has become so hard to do and so burdensome on a business. And then you've got doctors that are being told that they're too dumb to know who to prescribe opiates to. They're getting told, prescribing opiates to anyone is too much. And it's an insult to the doctor. The doctors, a lot of these guys, like this guy's case, he's been around doing the same thing for 50 years. He owns a private practice, and you think that he might kind of know his patients and what they need and whatnot. My wife has rheumatoid arthritis. She's had it for 39 years, most likely from a vaccination. From her booster shot when she was young. That's when it all really took off. But, you know, it's had a hard effect on her over the years. I mean, they literally put her through the ringer on various medications. It's just not right. I mean, they've actually had, the state requires them to urine test pain patients that are getting painkillers to prove they're not selling the drug. On and on it goes like this. So it's no way to treat dignified humans. I think what happens is we end up with all these laws and rules and regulations based on the bad guy, and the good people pay all the prices, and we need to respect and honor are good citizens, okay? So let's talk a little bit about the track record of maintaining value throughout all history. We have got, literally, folks, a stock market that's all over the board. We've got hyperinflation where people are literally, each of us, you, me, your sister, your brother, your child, your uncle, your grandpa, every darn last one of us has $1.8 million worth of debt on our back. Okay, the bottom line is that is going to blow sky high. It's not going to just blow locally in the U.S. There will be a global financial meltdown that is going to literally fleece the wealth of the world. And what will happen next is we are all going to be shoved into a police state and socialism. I'm sorry, but that's consistent with the end times. It's consistent with the Antichrist system. It is consistent. It is coming. We don't know when, where, how, or why, but we know it's coming. We've got, as far as we know, we've got the media in place to report. Folks, they go on TV and they tell you this is the way it is, and people are like robots, man. They turn on that TV, and whatever the TV tells them, they do. So the bottom line is there is a financial meltdown coming. I'm just going to be candid. I can't tell you when. But what I can tell you is God has created a simple system. And I was doing some reading the other day about what is consistent about all these billionaires. What do these billionaires do that other people don't? Okay, and you know what it really is it's assets. It's hard assets, folks. That is the one thing. Now, you're not going to be able to go out and buy, an oil well or, your own train company or whatever it is. But what you can do is you can own hard assets. Now, there's a movie out right now called All the Money in the World. And it's a very sad story about John Paul Getty, the richest man who ever lived, hands down, ever. I mean, loaded, okay? And his grandson gets kidnapped for $17 million ransom. And the whole point of the movie is the grandfather, who's worth billions at the time, which is trillions by today's wealth, he's so cheap and he's so self-centered and so mean that he will not pay the ransom. He just will not pay the ransom. And it gets to the point where they're being very rough to the child, to put it lightly, sending ears in envelopes, and they really put him through hell. And this guy, rich as rich gets, he just can't bring himself to pay the ransom until you can't even believe how far it goes. It's pretty amazing, to be honest with you. But the point is, this man's wealth is all accumulated in assets. And folks, I know a lot of really wealthy people, okay? I mean, I don't care if you talk about Dwayne Hagedorn, that is a billionaire who owns the Coeur d'Alene Resort and a whole bunch of real estate all over the place and amazing boats and planes and gold and diamonds and silver. And over the years, he's just built and built and built and built and built. I know so many people. I just traveled to Cabo with some family friends that are incredibly wealthy, worth tremendous amounts of money. They buy up, over the years, they've accumulated ranches. They start with real estate, they accumulate ranches. But her father, who left money to them that they worked with, believe it or not, her father accumulated gold and silver and rare coins. And that was the seed capital for which now they're worth hundreds of millions of dollars. I have relatives who, and close family friends who did very well in life, retired, put all their money in various paper assets, and folks, gone. one market sweep, you just get one storm and it is gone. And I want you to realize this. And folks, I want you to understand, and I will repeat it over and over again. Do not buy annuities. Don't buy whole life. Don't buy any of these insurance vehicles. You know, that they've got all these different life insurance, this and that. And folks, those are not investment vehicles. They are huge commission generating products for the person who sells them. Okay. That's it. I mean, you know, I was speaking with a guy in that industry here recently, and I said, well, my experience with the annuities and all this life insurance is it's easy to get your money in, but it's next to impossible to get it back out. Silence, you know, no good defense. Or he says, well, we disagree on that. Okay, we'll defend it. Well, I can't. Okay, folks, don't think that annuities, you get a guy who's insurance licensed and he sits down and he acts like a financial planner and he uses, you know, all these different analogies of the, you know, the top floor and bottom floor and middle floors of your life. And, you know, and what, you know, this, all these neat little theories of how you should be handling your money. Okay. But the fact of the matter is what you really want is a pyramid. You want stable wealth. This whole deception of gold and silver doesn't produce anything. This is one thing you'll hear people say. Well, I like to have stock in companies because a company produces something. Well, what does it take for that company to produce wealth? It takes a massive conglomeration of a huge amount of people working, you know, endlessly, tirelessly, all doing their job perfectly, of everybody getting things right, of buying things at the right price and not losing accounts and, you know, and managing expenses. And there's so much that goes into a company to run it. And when you buy a stock, you are the absolute last priority of that company. You're the final last straw. You are the last one that's ever going to get paid as a shareholder. Okay. It's just not a good place to be. People say, what about mutual funds? Okay. What about them? I mean, if you look at this, we have just had the most unbelievable bear or bull market in the history of the stock market since Trump got elected a year and a half ago. In that year and a half, we have seen an increase in the market we've gone from about 18 something on the Dow to 23. Okay. So we've gone up 5,000. You figure 5,000 against 18,000. Okay, that's the Dow. Now, remember, the Dow is an artificial index. It uses a weighted moving average. They remove and replace stocks regularly from the Dow. You and I don't have the luxury of doing that with our own investments. Okay, so it's fake. But even though, if we pretend for a minute that it's 100% real, it's up 30% in a year and a half. Okay, that's it. 30%. Now that's the best case scenario. That is the perfect stocks that are being manipulated and, you know, absolutely massaged and worked. This is their biggest show. This is their Broadway hit. 30% in a year and a half. Is that a lot? I mean, is that a lot? You know, the last run on silver, do you know it started at about $4? And it stopped around 50, okay? And it wasn't quick, which is nice. Like, you know, during the Hunt brothers, there was that short little blip of manipulation before the government figured out that there was a loophole that if somebody's too rich, they can actually make the market a free market. And so they put some regulations on it. However, the last time silver ran, post 9/11, we had silver, you know, 2001, 2002, sitting in the $4 an ounce range. And by 2011 or 12, it was in the $50 range. That's 10 years. We had a 10-year bull run where it went up about, you know, whatever that is, 1,200%. Gold's the same way. We had gold go from literally 275 to 1900. Now, gold doesn't go up as much, so that's like a 700% or 600% gain or whatever over 10 years. Gold doesn't go up as much because it's more of a stability thing. It's a counterbalance against inflation. Do you know that inflation's gone up 10%? Or I'm sorry, the spending power of the dollar has dropped 10% in the last 2 months. Folks, I am telling you that all this tax stuff, all the smoke and mirrors, I am telling you, it is deceiving you. It is not doing well, okay? It is a matter of time. We are stretched so thin. Folks, when we are talking about $1.8 million, just think about it. This isn't magic. I'm not making this up. I am literally telling you that you owe that kind of money. You personally owe, you know, that kind of money. You know, you just look at the debt clock, and you will see things you've never seen before in your life. I love it. I just can't. Maybe it's the fact that each generation has to figure things out for themselves. But you know what? Post, you know, depression and everything, people back then knew you just own gold and silver. You own rare coins. You own things that are worth something. You owned your dad's old watch. You know, you owned a backhoe or a tractor or a, you know, it didn't matter. They knew that an asset was an asset. You bought it. You owned it. And if you wanted to sell it, you sold it. Folks, this is what I'm telling you. Those only things that are biblically attributed as true wealth in the Bible are gold and silver-based assets. Gold and silver, livestock, okay, real estate, human life. Now, I will tell you, if you build and build and build and build and build and build and build, you will build a wonderful, I don't know if you want to call it nest egg or financial portfolio or whatever you want to refer to it, but it's a hard asset. I've lived on the other side. Before God opened my eyes to all this, and I believe me, I was well educated, and I was a banker, and I was an executive level management banker. I was good. And I didn't get any of it. I didn't get the big picture. And do you know that I put money, there's a book out there, by the way, called The Creature from Jekyll Island. You got to get it. We've got it in stock. Come and get it. It's a thick, thick book. Listen to me. It is written specifically, he says, at the front so that you or I can read it in a couple of hours. There's an introduction and a summary to every chapter that basically carries you through exactly what the situation is, the history of money, how we got where we're at, what the problems are, etc. Crystal clear. It talks about who did it, how they did it, why they did it, everything. It's the back of that book, the bibliography is like a half inch thick because it is so well documented, because they knew it would be attacked so hard, and it's never been even remotely close to being torn apart. Not one fact has ever been proven wrong in that book. It is the book that turned me around. It is the book that woke me up to the truth, okay? Get the book. But please read it the way the author says to read it the first time. Just read the intro and summary. I get so sick of people that I tell this to, and they get the book, and I go, how are you doing on the book? Well, I got through chapter 4, and I'm setting it by my bed. I'm like, you're supposed to read the intro and the summary. Well, I know it, but, you know, I started reading it. It was so darn interesting, I just couldn't put it down. Folks, get the book and then read it the way you're supposed to read it. Then if you want to go back and read it the other way, fine. But you got to understand, this stuff's simple. USDebtClock.org. 21, just our debt, our deficit, just our credit card bill for currency created. $21 trillion. $21 trillion. Okay? Now, that's just our deficit. Okay? That puts our debt per citizen, or well, let's say per taxpayer. And the other problem, we got illegal immigrants sucking off this system. We got everybody. That puts our debt per citizen at $175,000. Okay? Now, you go down through this thing. And then they start to show you, and I'm sorry, but I got to let my eyes follow it. It looks like they rearranged it every once in a while, probably because it's too confusing. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Let's see. Where is all these numbers? You moved them around on me, guys. Anyway. Well, I'm going to have to re-familiarize myself. They got personal debt per citizen, $57,000. How about this? How about U.S. total debt? Okay, now we got our deficit. And then we got our debt. Let me give you numbers. Our debt, which it says debt, but it really means deficit. Deficit means the currency we've created. This is just cash. It doesn't count credit. It doesn't count debt. Nothing. $21 trillion. We've got $21 trillion in currency we've created. As far as debt goes, it's $70 trillion. Now, that's in addition to the $21 trillion, $21 trillion, actually, it's, and plus $70 trillion, now we're at $91 trillion. Okay, how are we doing? We're doing pretty good. We're doing pretty good. I would say not. And then we get down to what we call unfunded liabilities. This is money that we owe. This is Social Security. This is future bills for the federal government. It's Medicare, it's Medicaid, it's VA payouts, etc. That's another $113 trillion. Okay, so we got $21 trillion in deficit. We've got $70 trillion in just good old-fashioned debt that we owe now. And then we've got another $113 trillion in unfunded liabilities. That's money we owe later. So our debt, in other words, that, you know, you get it, okay? So that's to all combined. That this is just our government, $204 trillion. $204 trillion. I am blown away by this. I'm going to try to figure out. I don't even have a calculator that'll let me put all these zeros in. And then you're like going, that's a million, a billion, a trillion. Okay, so I'll divide this by 300 million. 300, it's like, what? So that puts our debt, folks, at some astounding amount of money. Our total debt per family is 800 and some thousand, plus our debt, they've got our liability per taxpayer at $928,000, plus 800,000 per family, you know. You get it? All I'm saying is simple. It ain't gonna stop. It ain't gonna fix itself, okay? And I'm always short on time, but listen to me. If you follow what God says, all right, no other assets other than those biblically attributed. Okay, nothing other than those assets that are biblically endorsed, authorized, and attributed as true wealth have the ability to or performance record throughout all history. Real estate, you know, now is starting to show weaknesses because it's been overstimulated. This is how they justify rapid dollar creation. We've already gone through this housing slumps before. Precious metals cannot default, okay? Precious metals are compact. They're like titleless real estate. They're compact. Generation to generation, century to century, millennia to millennia, through all language barriers, all forms of government, all types of economic conditions. There is no exception. There's no risk to owning hard assets. There's no risk, other than theft, and we can help you secure it in one of the highest, most secure locations in the Western United States. And you can. There's other ways we can help you do that, too, and talk to you about it. Stocks, bonds, annuities, they all will fail again, I guarantee you. Every one of them will ultimately fail. Do you hear me? Every paper asset, every piece of paper you own will fail. It's a paper promise from man promising a positive and prosperous future. Does that make any sense in today's global climate? That your paper is a promise from man for a prosperous, happy, promising future. You know, you get into preservation quality, and not price should be your focus. It is true wealth, immediately liquid, anonymous, transportable. It has outperformed all other investments throughout history. The longest bull market in financial history in precious metals. And it's gone up thousands and thousands and thousands of percent over the last 40, 50 years since it's been deregulated. There's huge shortages with an inevitable exponential price increases coming. Do not buy exchange-traded funds. Don't buy mining stocks. And by all means, do not buy annuities, folks. There's huge demand from China and India. Chinese are gobbling up precious metals-based assets. They're gobbling up all of our collectible U.S. coins, believe it or not. We have got out-of-control inflation. Worldwide inflation numbers are truly in the double digits, okay? Every country but the U.S. is admitting to double-digit inflation. The U.S. provides concocted, deceptive consumer price index showing artificially low inflation figures, and I'm out of time again. Folks, trust me. Just do what the Bible says. It's so simple. Give us a call. Let us help you build a nice, solid, rock-solid portfolio. Just put your money away. Save it for your kids. Save it for your family. We buy estates all the time. It's a good thing. It's a great thing. They're liquid. They're easily priced. There's daily prices anyway. Thanks for tuning in. Be back Friday. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.